So the doctor is talking to the rabbi. How do you know it's a joke? Already with the laughing. It might not even be a good one. Wait. The doctor says, you know, rabbi, sometimes I treat my patients for free. The rabbi thinks for a second, goes, I do that. Doctor says, you don't understand. When they have prescription medicines, I check what it is, and sometimes I even subvent, I pay a little bit of the money so that they will be able to afford what they need. Rabbi thinks for a minute and goes, I do that. The doctor now is getting frustrated. He says, sometimes I do surgery, and I don't add anything to the bill of the hospital because I know they can't afford it. Rabbi goes, I do that. The doctor says, look, rabbi, with all due respect, you have congregants, but you don't have patients. You don't prescribe medicine, and you certainly don't do surgery. The rabbi goes, oh, no, I didn't mean that. I meant, I say nice things about myself, too. Now, even that joke is actually a very keen and important human insight for this part of the year. Which is, first of all, that other people are mirrors. They say and do things that actually reflect on us, but all too often, we leave it with them. The rabbi could just as easily have said to himself, look at this, guys, telling me all these things about himself that are nice, but he didn't. Instead, like a good rabbi, he reflected on what it said about him. And that has to do with the idea of the confessional that we say on the Yamim Noraim, on the high holidays. Because each year, it strikes people how many things you confess to that you didn't do. I mean, yeah, some of them you did, obviously. Every sin of speech, trust me, you've done. Trust me on this one. Gossip, saying bad things about people, all of that, running to do evil, we've done all those things. But there's a lot of sins that when we look at, we say, well, the reason we say them is that we say them in the plural. So obviously somebody at Sinai Temple has done them. Or more likely at another synagogue in the city. And so we make it collective because we're part of Klal Yisrael and we're all responsible for one another. And if some Jew somewhere committed a sin, then somehow I'm implicated. And so we say it in the plural, even though, to be honest, doesn't touch us all that much. And this is part of a tendency that everyone has to diminish what they do in two ways. One is, we identify sins that are not ours and therefore exonerate ourselves from what we do. So there was an orgy of self-righteousness when people saw Ray Rice hit his wife, then fiance, now wife, in an elevator. And everybody said how terrible and awful and unthinkable it was. And surely it was. But I wonder how many people looked at it and said, now what ways do I wound the people I love? Maybe I don't hit them in elevators. But am I all that different from another human being that I actually don't ever assault in words, in deed, people that I love? In other words, did we take what is the collective sin, and even though we don't commit it, apply it to ourselves? Because too often what we do is we take things to the extreme and therefore we're innocent. And the same thing happens, by the way, in sins that are committed that we refer to publicly again and again. That is, the easiest thing to do is to condemn the atrocities that happen in the world and to ignore the little evils that happen in our lives. In that sense, the people who do truly terrible things, and I don't have to elaborate, you know exactly, that dominate the news, truly terrible things, vicious, unthinkable, evil, in its most extreme sense, they do us a disservice in another way. They rob us of a perspective on our own bad deeds. Am I really going to get upset that I insulted someone when there are people who are actually beheading other people? And so, seeing examples of egregious evil, of historic evil, I feel like my hands are pretty clean. And we forget that the reason that the confession is put in the plural is because you're supposed to judge you against you, not against them. You can't go before the Kisei HaKavod, before God's throne, and say, I never punched my wife in an elevator. Let me in. Because the key here is that you have to judge yourself by what your capacity is, what your situation is, and not by the fact that other people are worse. And yet, especially at this time of year, our tendency is to do the opposite. We saw this, by the way, very powerfully, both in legitimate ways and in illegitimate ways, in Israel. It is not sufficient to defend what Israel does by saying the other guy is worse. The other guy is worse. I don't think there's any question about that. But you don't exonerate your own actions by pointing to the badness of other people's actions. You have to judge them on your own, and that's what Israel does. And that's what every human being has to do as well. You have to say to yourself, okay, granted, this happens, and this happens, but what about me? And that's when introspection becomes a religious obligation. We don't normally think of it that way. But the truth is that what Socrates made the first principle of Greek philosophy, which is to know yourself, which he got from the Delphic Oracle, that is also the first principle of tshuva. If you have no idea how you appear to others, if you have no idea what your normal patterns of behavior are or how you affect the people around you, you can't possibly do tshuva. Because you can't repair what you don't begin to understand. And one of the best ways of doing tshuva is to go back to the beginning, to use other people as a mirror. To say to them, what do I do that you think I could do better? And the people in your life are an indispensable resource for the tshuva you have to do. Don't ask them, am I better than this terrible person down the street? Ask them, what do I do that I could do better? And that's what the collective is really supposed to do. Yes, there are sins in the collective you don't commit, but if you introspect enough, you will discover that there's a part of you that could. That all of us have complex souls. The poet Goethe said he never heard of a crime of which he felt incapable. And you say to yourself, does that mean he was a terrible man? No, I think it means that he had a comprehensive imagination. He understood himself deeply. He realized that nothing human, even terrible things, were alien to him because all human souls have commonalities. And if Judaism believed for a moment that there was someone who was not capable of evil, then, of course, Yom Kippur would only be for the bad people. And so at this time of year, I a little bit want to caution us against an overindulgence in the public condemnation of others at the expense of the private exploration of ourselves. It is too easy to feast on the grievance of the badness of others and to ignore the reality of our own sins. Now, sin is a heavy word. So let me say a word about what Jewish teachers tell you about sin that is not true. I heard growing up 1,000 times that the Hebrew word for sin was chet, which is an archery term, which means missing the mark. And that therefore, Jews don't really think of sin as something heavy and difficult. We miss the mark. That's all. It's a little thing. What they didn't tell you was that there are lots of other words for sin. Pesha, avon. And the Jews think of sin as something serious, not just missing the mark. When you say something cruel to somebody, when you crush them with your words, you're not missing the mark. You're doing something serious. Something that could be lasting. Something for which you have to do tshuva. Our tradition actually takes sin seriously. It matters. Because remember that the first statement that is made about human beings is that we're B'Tselem Elohim, that we're in the image of God. So we don't take it lightly. Introspection is not a trivial task. Beating your chest is because we understand that you have to awaken yourself. It is, as I say, the Jewish defibrillator. You have to get your heart started in order to feel, so that you can feel not only what is done to you, but what you do to others. All of this takes work. It takes courage. It takes time. And it takes, most of all, a seriousness about your soul. It's true, you can go through life and never work on your soul, but remember that the Talmud says that the only reason the mitzvot were given, the only reason, is rak litzaref et habriot, to refine human beings. In other words, if your soul isn't growing year to year, then in a very deep sense, there's no reason for you to be here on a spiritual level. Because the goal of life in the Jewish tradition is not happiness. The goal of life is growth. On the assumption that growth will most of the time make you happy, but sometimes it'll make you miserable, and still you have to grow. Remember that beautiful passage in the Talmud, that behind every blade of grass is an angel that whispers, grow. Well, if there's an angel behind every blade of grass, imagine what there is behind us. Whispering, grow. And you don't grow your soul only by identifying the evil of others. You grow your soul by exploring your soul. By doing tshuva. By apologizing to those whom you have hurt. By seeking to do better. By taking Elul and Slichot and Rosh Hashanah and the Aseret Yemei Tshuva and Yom Kippur, as if this is our chance, our Olympics of growth, the time when we can be better than we were last year, or the year before, or the year before that. It is, in that sense, a beautiful time of year. You know that Yom Kippur is traditionally the time, and still is, when young men and women would find one another. It was Singles Day. And it still is. Just walk out to the halls of any synagogue, and you will discover that that's a big part of what Yom Kippur is about. And the reason that for the rabbis that made sense was because love is part of growth. Because finding someone to love who loves you is indispensable to growing your soul. Because until you find that selfless peace that allows you to give yourself to someone else, you haven't grown. Yeah, that's the result. Thank you. Appreciate that. And so at this time of year, it's about what happens inside of us, but also what happens inevitably between us. Our relations to one another. The way in which we can look at each other and understand that that intimate connection is also something that draws you up, that expands and deepens you, that helps you grow. That's why Yom Kippur is a solemn day, but not a sad day. Because it's not a day of mourning. It's a day of growth. As we come closer to this season, and we will inevitably be discussing the issues that befuddle and perplex and depress and preoccupy us in the world, the forces that threaten to upend the fragile layer of civilization that we have worked so hard as human beings and God knows as Jews to maintain. As we see all around the world developments that are dispiriting, don't get lost outside of yourself. Remember that this time is about you, not in a narcissistic way, not in an egotistical way, but in the way that God intends us to grow, to reach. The Kutzker Rebbe taught that every human being comes down to earth on a ladder, and then God draws the ladder back up into the heavens. And he said, when we're young, we feel that distance, so we start to jump. We start to leap, trying to reach the ladder that God has pulled out of our grasp. He said, but over time, some people get tired and they stop leaping and they stay on earth. But God, he said, loves leaping souls. So this year, don't get tired. Don't stop jumping. You may not reach that ladder, but don't give up trying. Because in the process of trying to reach towards the heavens, you and, God willing, those around you will grow. And then this year, for us, for our souls, and maybe for the world, will be a little bit better, a little bit more peaceful, a little bit more filled with love than the year that has been. Shabbat Shalom.